Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Spartan Speak, a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and USA Today Network. I am Graham Couch, soon to be joined here by Nathaniel Bott from the Lansing State Journal, and later Chris Solari from the Detroit Free Press. We are going to talk Michigan State hockey off the top and then get into some MSU hoops and football as well. But first, it's hockey, because I think what happened this season is... worth a deeper conversation. Where this program is headed is worth a conversation. And for that, my travel partner for 7-8 hours both ways on the trip to suburban St. Louis last week, Nathaniel Bott. Nate, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Yeah, it was a good trip. Too much rain maybe on the way back, but it was all good.
You hung in there. You were behind the wheel, and it looked like a couple times we were going to skid out. And I don't know what's going on with those roads in northern Indiana. They need to... the roads look fine. They just hold a lot of water. A little dicey there for a few minutes. All right, let's get into the weekend that was. So it was a weird place to have an NCAA regional, but I don't think and so while that wasn't ideal, and I think there are lots of things they could do to improve that situation, including home ice for first rounds, or at least Van Andel or Wing Stadium or somebody else nearby hosting a regional, I don't think that also will, years from now, take away from the experience the players had there and how important it was, before we get to the Michigan game, to win that first game and the way they did it. And the score of 55 seconds left and then an overtime, like, that's something tangible they will have forever. They won an NCAA tournament game. They did it in dramatic fashion. Like, it's going to feel like they accomplished something in this tournament, correct?
Yeah, 100%. You know, just obviously an exciting finish there with Levshnov making an incredible play to set up the tying goal and then to get the overtime winner. Yeah, you know, they haven't won an NCAA tournament game since 2008. You know, it's just another checkmark, another stepping stone for this program going forward. You know, you think of everything that they've accomplished here in 2 years under Adam Nightingale, winning a Big Ten regular season, wire to wire, winning a Big Ten tournament, you know, just the on-ice production that they've seen, scoring over 100 goals, you know, both seasons here, scored 170-plus this year, hadn't been done since, you know, 2010. So, a lot of tangible, you know, on-paper success that you can point to that could definitely lead these guys going forward into bigger things.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing to watch that final, that finish. And one of the things I wrote that night was, you know, they are a team that I think, even when they should panic, they don't. And that's a cultural thing. I think that's also comes from having a lot of success late in games throughout the year. Like, you have to see that done. So you sort of believe in yourself, and you have to believe in your abilities and all that stuff. I mean, that's just, yeah, it was a win that, it just... It's one of those things that you've now had an NCAA tournament win. So when you get back there, you know what that feels like. It also doesn't become some bugaboo if you don't get it for a couple more years or things like that. The Michigan game, I think we can agree that it would have been better for Michigan State in a lot of ways had it been any other opponent, at least to lose to. North Dakota would have been fun, big hockey program, big crowd there. It would have been an interesting game. You think, though, like, their chances of winning that game were better against Michigan than they would have been North Dakota anyway.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they just won 4 straight against Michigan. I know that obviously that gives the Wolverines a chip on their shoulder, and they were able to, you know, that 12-second stretch where they scored 2 to take a 2-goal lead, you know, is obviously, you know, a killer moment for Michigan State. But, yeah, I think, you know, North Dakota would have been a tougher test for them. especially if, you know, those North Dakota fans stayed for an extra day. I think we kind of saw it in the second game of the semifinals. You know, I think they had the biggest attendance, you know, despite being maybe the farthest team away from St. Louis. But I think either way, you know, it was going to be a tough battle for Michigan State. And I thought they really, I thought they played pretty well against Michigan. You know, I think they had certainly their moments. I think, you know, Nightingale spoke afterwards. They had a lot of chances, but it comes down to finishing. And I thought Michigan's goaltender played outstanding. And but the Spartans certainly had their chances against Michigan. But like I said, that 12-second stretch was just brutal.
It's just hard. It's hard to beat a team five times in a year when you're pretty equal teams. And in some ways, Michigan has a little more in certain areas, I think. If anything, Michigan, I think, underachieved throughout much of the season. They're playing great hockey now. But, you know, they were like when you look at Michigan State, it feels like they got everything they could out of the season. They were a really good team. It wasn't like they were some plucky underdog. They beat a lot of really good teams. But it does feel like there is another level for MSU hockey to achieve, like a level of, like, this was a team that could play with anybody, could beat anybody, but there's a level of dominance, and we've seen it in the past from certain teams like Minnesota, maybe BC this year. We've seen it from, you know, in varying years from other teams, and that's not quite where this MSU team is yet.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, to have that kind of sustained dominant success, I think you have to see it, and, you know, I think they started to see it a little bit, you know, but you know, you can look back to some results this year. You know, I look back to the Great Lakes Invitational Final. You know, 99 out of 100 times they played that way against Michigan Tech, they win that game. And, you know, I thought they were dominant in that game throughout the whole stretch. But that's how hockey is sometimes. You know, a couple bounces don't go your way. And on paper, it looks like, you know, you're the way better team and you end up losing in a shootout. So. But yeah, I think just the continued, you know, recruiting, I think they're just going to continue to get better and better guys consistently. And you're going to see that. I think MSU was an extremely deep team this year. I think they're just going to continue to get deeper as in terms of talent, not just in terms of guys who can really play. You know, I think just the overall talent is just going to continue to increase. They're going to get the best guys coming in. And you're just going to continue to see them grow.
All right, well, let's stay on that. The idea of kind of growing, where it goes from here, the best guys, and why you say that. I mean, I think part of it is the evidence is already there. Like Levshinov, you know, comes to Michigan State. 2 years ago, he would not have come to Michigan State, right? You know, and the guys who've made Augustine flips to MSU with his relationship with Nightingale. You just see guys who are of high level impact players already choosing Michigan State. So that. And Michigan State has not done anything, certainly, and that was before. In other words, that was before they had this run here, and they won two Big Ten titles in a year, and made the NCAA tournament as a one seed, and all that stuff. So they've got a staff I think people are excited about. They've got facilities that are up to par now, and they've got a fan base that is fervent and into it, and is as much as many. I mean, North Dakota may top it, but there aren't a lot of better fan bases. In the country, they get a lot of stuff. I'll give us a nod. Like, if you're a and we're not here to promote Michigan State hockey. Our job is to cover it. But we were just at a regional where, look, nobody was there other than the student newspaper to cover Michigan. We covered Michigan for the Free Press, right? And don't get me wrong, they're our sister paper. That's part of our job. And if we hadn't been there, they might have figured something else out. However, there was nobody there covering Western Michigan. I think a huge misstep by MLive. Because they had three teams there, and there were people there covering North Dakota, but college hockey is one of those things where it's not a given that you have really good coverage, and I think that's one of the things that you know, it has a feel to a bigger program. It has a fan base that warrants that coverage. We don't do it out of the goodness of our hearts. We do it because there's a fan base that wants it, and that's proven this year to us. So I think that's of value too. But when you look at already what's happened, like when you start saying they're going to keep getting the best players, talk about what you're already seeing in the transfer portal and next year's class and sort of the evidence that says this is just the beginning.
Yeah, no, you look at, you know, who's potentially coming in next year. You know, they have two of the better forwards from the U18 team, you know, who committed pretty early. They're going to be here next year. You know, that just continues to add, you know, the transfer portal. know, I don't know how much exactly Michigan State's gonna do. I think it kind of depends on a few things, whether a couple guys turn pro. I anticipate that all the underclassmen from this season who saw regular playing time are going to return. I don't see Isaac Howard jumping to pro yet. It kind of depends on where Levchenov, what team drafts him, but for the most part, the pretty consensus plan for defensemen is they take a little longer to develop him, so I'd expect him back here next year. And then you just, you know, when you have those guys already in the building, you know, who you bring in, you know, they're just going to learn from those guys, and they're just going to, you know, keep the same, or adopt the same work ethic as them. You know, I think Jared DeMichael says it best that, you know, they're not a TikTok, Instagram program. You know, you really have to put the work in, and those are the guys that they're recruiting, and those are the guys that they want, you know, to come in. You know, they preach that they want everyone who comes in to get a chance at playing professionally, and they think that the way that they're set up, the way that they train, the way that they practice, the way that they run their systems is up to a professional standard, and that's what they're preaching to recruits, and I think a lot of those recruits are listening.
Yeah, I mean, I would expect it becomes a really it'll be interesting, because I think it's going to be a really attractive place for kids in the portal and recruits, but you're also going to get to a point where, you know, until this point, I think portal kids would see there was a need for them at Michigan State. There's going to be less of that, and it's going to be, well, wait a sec, is there room for me? Is there a fit? Am I, you know, can I get on the first two lines here? That's harder to do now, right? It becomes more competitive, and they'll get the better pick of the litter, so to speak. I think one thing that'll be interesting, too, is I think it's going to be a lot of fun for fans to be, you know, following this program in the years to come. But I don't know that it'll ever be as fun again in certain ways that it was this year, because there is something about the initial rise. There's something about all the firsts. And they didn't leave a whole lot of firsts to be done, if that makes any sense. Like, obviously, getting to a Frozen Four is one that's out there. But they won the Big Ten, wire to wire. They won the Big Ten tournament. Did it on their home ice in dramatic fashion against their rival. And, you know, won a lot of games throughout the year that, you know, I mean, I guess they're, you know, it'll still be entertaining. It'll still be something people really enjoy. But I think there's something about this year that'll be hard to replicate. You agree?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just you know, especially for having covered the program here. This is my fifth season covering them, and you know, I saw what it was like 2-3 years ago. So I think to see the fan base come back in such droves, you know, with the way the Mon atmosphere was, just selling out every game, you know, a lot of standing room only, like they weren't just saying like, oh, we only have standing room only, like that was actually the truth. And yeah, like that Big Ten tournament final, I'd never been in Munn when it was that loud when that game winner went in. So I think just having the fan base back and engaged as much as they, and as having them buy in as much as they did this year, I think it'll be tough to kind of replicate that feeling, even though I anticipate going forward the crowds will still be sold out and everything. But just, yeah, the initial rise is something to kind of marvel at.
Well, yeah, I'm still a little bummed that I wasn't at that game at Munn. It was the night of Michigan State men's basketball losing to North Carolina, and I was in Charlotte. But, yeah, I remember watching that on my phone and just thinking, that looks like fun, and I think the people who were there would agree. Nate, you do an excellent job covering the team. It was fun being on the road with you, and I don't say that about most of the people I travel with. So I appreciate it. Thanks for taking some time, man. We'll talk again soon.
Yeah, of course, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, let's bring Chris in now and turn to Michigan State basketball and spring football.
Why? It's a hockey school.
There's an argument for it.
You've never asked that part of the question.
argument for that. Yeah, I always, you know, I thought of you, Chris, when I was in St. Louis. How much hockey you covered of Michigan State, and just how little good hockey you got to cover of Michigan State in the later years doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I was going to say in the later years. I mean, that's
earlier on.
It's one thing if you had a chance to cover that, you know, 2010 onward period until Adam Nightingale came back. It's another thing if you got a chance to compare it with the Ron Mason era. And, you know, that was one of the things that the first real beat that I had at the State News in college back in 1994-95 was covering that team that had Anson Carter, Steve Gwala, Mike Buzak in goal, a lot of real high-end players. Those years in the late, in mid to late 90s, I got to see that. I got to see Munn was like when it was the pinnacle of college hockey. And, you know, to see the dip and then see the resurrection has certainly been something because I've made that argument for many years in our coverage that this is a hockey school in a lot of ways. The problem was it wasn't a hockey school for quite a while because the resources weren't there and the talent wasn't there.
Yeah, and the worst thing that happened to MSU hockey in terms of coverage was the timing of its dip. Really around the time that digital metrics became important, MSU hockey took its slide. So we didn't have because there's lots of stuff newspapers covered well in 1997 that they should not have covered all that well. We just didn't know. Right. People didn't care, right? So, and yet then MSU hockey goes on this slide, and there's a couple years where it looks like Pauma Westphalia football is more important to people, and it's what the heck's going on? But then you really saw, anger had slid to apathy, but there was an awakening that, even last year there was an awakening we could see, but this year, you were right in a lot of ways, Chris. I mean, there was, I did question whether the fan base was just sort of this, likes to be entertained, but there's a kind of a cap on really how invested they are, and it showed up.
Well, I think some of it, before we switch, is if you remember the timing of everything with Ron Mason leaving the program coincided with the rise of Michigan State basketball, the rise of Michigan State women's basketball as they were heading into the McCauley era. So the eyeballs and attention that were there going to the basketball kind of came from the hockey. And it could be in the mid-90s or the late 80s, early 90s, Michigan State hockey was the only thing competing for national titles. And you had those other sports that came along in the winter and brought people across the street to Breslin more frequently for both men and women. It was still sellout crowds into the Comley era, but when the losing started, there was something to take the attention away.
No, it used to be what took the attention away from the losing elsewhere. And then
exactly.
And MSU hockey was the self-esteem of Michigan State's fan base in a lot of ways. It was the program that competed for national titles, that beat Michigan regularly. It was all those things that they weren't in other sports. If you want to really annoy Tom Izzo, who loves hockey, he flew down for that first game on Friday against Western Michigan in the regional. Tell him he actually destroyed MSU hockey. He didn't really, but you know what I mean? People no longer needed MSU hockey the same way they did in previous eras. Speaking of programs that are up and down that people want resurrected, let's talk some MSU men's basketball. We have not talked since Michigan State was we've talked, but we haven't done one of these podcasts, I should say. We've written a lot. We've talked a lot.
Ever since Adam Nightingale destroyed Tom Izzo's program.
That's right. Since Michigan State lost in the second round of the NCAA tournament to North Carolina, obviously that's a little bit ways gone by, but let's quickly just sort of put this team in perspective before we spin it forward, Chris. It's a group that absolutely, as Tom Izzo said, underachieved, but that underachieving goes all the way down to, I think, the coaching staff miscalculating on how ready the center position was. There were some things that happened that weren't helpful, the Kohler's injury and that him never really having the season he would have had. I think did affect them. But and then you just didn't get the consistent grit out of the best players on the team throughout the season to maximize who they were. And had they done that, they would not be an 8 or a 9 seed. They would have not have been playing North Carolina in the second round, And who knows? Because they did, I think, we saw the makings of a team that had a run in them, the way they started against North Carolina, the way they blew out Mississippi State, the way they played in the Big Ten tournament in the second half against Minnesota, and against a Purdue team that is still alive. When you see how good Tennessee was, that was a team they played in the exhibition. This team was not that far away, Chris.
No, I mean, you know, you watch that North Carolina game back, you're going to see 15 minutes of some of the best basketball Michigan State played all season. But you're also going to see 25 minutes of some of the worst moments that, you know, like Tom Izzo said afterward outside the locker room, it's a microcosm of their season completely. I mean, they had the talent, they had the ability to compete with, but they didn't have the wherewithal to get past all these great teams that they played, the Arizonas, the Purdues, the North Carolinas in this game, just go through the rest of the season, Duke, all the way back to the Champions Classic. I mean, they were in all those games and just didn't have the it factor that you needed. And, you know, I'm curious to see what happens. You know, we talk so much about the center position, and I think they found some things down the stretch in that rotation that they started to get out of Cooper, and Sissoko kind of turning his game around a little bit and using Booker more at the four and you know, interspersing Kohler to kind of get some really, I mean, the thing about Kohler is everyone talks about his offensive game, but he is the garbage guy that they needed. They didn't have a garbage guy when they were missing the threes underneath to get a board and go back up and score, which Kohler did at times down the stretch. But to me, what I'm interested in is what happens next at the point guard spot. You know, obviously AJ Hogard's got a fifth year, and Jeremy Fears is coming off a gunshot wound in his leg. And, you know, that, you know, you're going to be reliant more than likely, I would assume. And, you know, we're here April 3rd and guys are still entering the portal and coming out of the portal. I think I saw Michigan Doug McDaniel today transferred to Kansas State. So that's going to be a fluid process here for, what, another month? But, you know, whatever Hogard does with that fifth year, if he leaves and Fears, by all things that Tom Izzo has said, sounds like he'll get the keys to the car next year, where's he going to be at physically? I mean, you know, that, you know, and the development of Trey Holloman helps to some extent, but he's probably more better served off the ball. And, you know, what do you do with Jaden Akins? Is he, you know, with Tyson Walker gone, he makes sense to slide over to the two. So I think there's a lot of interesting questions in this offseason that go beyond the center position, but for sure the center position was an albatross this year.
It is a fascinating offseason. It is one of the more, because I think there is an understanding from Izzo that, you know, he can look back the last 4 years, and it started with the COVID year, and it wasn't all this class's fault. Like the 2018 class, they own really the whatever happened 2 years ago and before that. But it wasn't a group that achieved ever at the level that he had achieved the last decade, where every other year they were in contention for a national title and Big Ten title. And, I mean, you look at it, I mean, it was like clockwork. I mean, really, you go back to coming out of 2009, 2010, then they're a one seed in 2012. Then the 2014 team's in the Elite Eight and was probably the best team he's ever had. 2015, they actually make the Final Four. 16, they've got the Denzel Valentine team. 18, they did lose to Syracuse, but they're a 30-win team. And 2019 and 20, they were Final Four and then a team interrupted by a pandemic. Like, that was a great decade in a lot of ways. And this has not been since, right? There's no way around that. And so,
well, what's the missing factor? The missing factor is that there's no NBA players on these rosters.
Partly.
I mean, you had Max Christie, and that's about it.
You could argue that the last team of, like, the Final Four team with Cassius Winston was a special, special college player. You either have to have a pros, and I know Xavier Tillman's a pro, you know, but you either have to have pros, and they didn't have a Tillman. So, to be fair, they didn't have that guy either, who was a big man. So what they basically had, though, on that team was a great big who could play multiple positions and guard multiple types of players, and a great point guard,
yep,
who could score too. So, and that they didn't have either of those this year, right? And so I think if you have those those two elements, it's a different dynamic. So yeah, I think that's part of the difference. And then they didn't have great point guard play throughout. They had moments from Hogard, but he was inconsistent. And I think frustratingly so to a lot of people. Like the idea of him coming back, I was talking with somebody else who thought that he should come back. And I thought, I just don't know. There are times to turn the page. And I think for him and for MSU, this is now, I'm not saying there isn't some risk in going with a Jeremy Fears, Trey Holloman, you know, Jace Richardson is a true freshman, three options at point guard. But there are times where, you know, I mean, I think A.J. Hogarth can go to another school and have a good year and make some NIL money. And it's not that he's not an effective player. He just sort of had his run at Michigan State. And I think Izzo probably feels that way. But it is a good question. And then the big man position, I mean, I think, you know, what are they going to do there? And who's going to be back? And, you know, I don't think we have a firm grasp on that yet. You know, for a long time, I thought Sissoko would be back. I'm less confident in that now.
Yeah.
I'm more confident that Kohler might stick around. I think Cooper will. Are they going to add to that position? I don't know. You know, I don't know for sure that they do. And if they don't, is Izzo prepared to spend that offseason saying, hey, I think Booker's going to become this, and with these guys and with him and Kohler and you know, but they certainly have to go get somebody. And if they go get a really good wing, does that solve that position or solve the overall issue with talent and size and length? These are good questions.
Yeah, I mean, Jaden Akins, you know, over the last 2-3 years has done a pretty decent job on the wing, but he's still 6'4". I mean, that you can say all you want about the modernization.
No, he's
going to
play
basketball.
Right.
He's a two. He's a 6'4".
Yeah, he needs to play the two.
I mean, seriously, and 6'4" might be a little bit of a stretch with him. You know, could you imagine Sean Respert playing the three? No.
Yeah.
I mean, it's he's out of position, and you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens because, I mean, you know, you wonder how much the shooting slumps that Akins would get in came from having to be on the wing. And I know they're really interchangeable in Izzo's offense, those two, the two and the three, but, you know, it's the defensive side, the stuff that takes a lot out of you when you're guarding up 3 inches sometimes on the wing. I mean, it's that takes a lot out of your legs.
And that is a good question, too. Like, if, you know, I mean, a lot of times the two and the three in their offense has been something that they can are a little interchangeable. And you can survive as a smaller wing if you have the right parts at the four and the five.
Right.
Who are versatile and defensively can make up for things at the rim. And they didn't have that this year in terms of the rim protection and things like that. So I'm really curious to see what Akins becomes as a senior playing the two guard as a guy who's going to have a chance to be a featured scorer. Is he a guy who really takes off? Does he have that in him? I think there's a chance he does, and this will be his real chance to do that. You know, I am curious to see, like, does Trey Holloman have another step in him? He took a massive step from year one to year two, right? Now, eventually some guys hit a ceiling. Like, what is Trey Holloman college basketball ceiling? I don't think we really have a
he's fascinating firm. Because he's a guy that, and sometimes you see this with guys who are multi-sport guys, that they don't hit their ceiling in the sport that they choose when they get to college until their junior year, because you know, and that massive step that he took between freshman and sophomore year this winter, I think is attributable to not playing football anymore, having a full college off season. Now, will the next offseason make that second step even bigger? I mean, it's fascinating because I do think he's a tremendous athlete. But, you know, what's funny is, you know, kind of going back to the Hogard situation, the one thing, and this is not so much about AJ, this is more of an overarching thing, is that I think a lot of guys at the Power 5 major conference level right now, particularly those older guys that have kind of gone from, you know, either saw playing time diminish or saw their role diminish or saw themselves pigeonholed into something, the question that they have isn't so much about NIL. It isn't so much about, you know, anything. It's do you want to be a piece or do you want to be a star somewhere else? I think that's a question that's there, particularly in basketball, more so than football, is do you want to be a piece to a team that may win a championship or may not, or do you want to go somewhere, have the ball in your hands, play 38 minutes a game, and get all the shots you want? There's nothing wrong with guys asking that question. And, you know, listen, Hogard might even decide after 4 years he's done with school and wants to go and play overseas. I mean, there's a lot of things that that guys like him in particular in this final class of COVID have to answer for themselves. There's no more COVID years after this class, after this group of fifth year guys that are making the decision, other than maybe guys that have taken a red shirt along the way.
Yeah. So that's, I just can't imagine that Hogard's a fit in what they want to do. I just can't imagine it. Now, it'd be interesting if he said he wanted to come back, how they would deal with that.
Well, and that always, ultimately that comes down to the school's decision now with the fifth year.
Yep. The fifth year is right. Right. So I would not expect him to be back. The big man situation will be interesting. I do think they need better rebounding there. I think they need to go get somebody who can help them rebound in there, whether it's a 4-5, somebody can play multiple positions. That's just my opinion. It doesn't mean I don't think that there's a lot of intrigue between a Jackson Kohler, Xavier Booker tandem and things like that. Like, I still think some of the 5-out offense they were hoping to play last year before Kohler got hurt would be intriguing to see. And there's a part of me that, because look, they should have redshirted Jackson Kohler. If they did that, this would be so much easier, because then he would have an easier chance to see what he was going to become within MSU's offense and still have 2 years of eligibility. I think they screwed that up. That's my opinion. He is still an intriguing prospect. The problem is for Izzo is going to be, can you, again, trust your big guys, unless you're looking to play Booker at the five, like what they're going to become, that they're going to be healthy, what they're going to develop into. And I think that's a really tough sell. I'd be surprised if they don't bring in some sort of help inside, but I'm not as convinced of that as I was a week or two ago. So we'll see. We'll see where all that goes. I think a lot of things are fluid, and it's who you can get. And you also don't want to just bring in, you know, bumps on a log for the sake of having bodies. I don't think they're going to do that either. It's who you can get and who you get that fits what you want to do and how that messes with the rest of the roster.
Got to get a little longer, a little bigger. I mean, it's funny because outside of the locker room, after the Mississippi State game, when we were waiting to talk, Izzo, North Carolina teams comes out of the locker room, and Izzo looks over and looks at me and goes, "Boy, is everybody taller than us?" And at first I thought he was talking about me and him because we're right about the same height. And I'm like, "Yeah, tell me about it." And then
yes,
I'm like, wait a minute. He's looking at North Carolina. He's not looking at me. So, this team is missing that 6'6 to 6'8 guy. I mean, you had Malik Hall. Colin Carr at 6'5 is undersized for that.
And you really need it in a wing. If you can find like a 6'7 wing, 6'6 wing, that's what they need. Yeah, yeah. And I think they're going to work hard to get that.
And I'll tell you, I mean, the rumors out there about, Kansas offering AJ Store, or I think it was Kansas, or Store
yeah,
going.
$1 million or whatever.
$1 million. I mean, Izzo kind of talked about that and hinted at that in the final few weeks of the regular season and Big Ten tournament, that some of the things that he had heard are astronomically mind-blowing. And that's when I heard that, I was like, that's the world we're in right now. I mean, these guys are going to be commanding and asking for it. It's a salary. It's what it is. It's not, there's no name, image, likeness. This is paying guys to play. And
perhaps we probably need to stop. We need to stop calling it name, image, likeness. That probably needs to stop happening.
It is. It has nothing to do with that.
You're right. 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 It should be a payment. Like I think the vernacular has to change. It cannot be, if something truly is NIL, it's fine. And I'm not saying pay to play is wrong. What I'm saying is we need to start calling it a salary, because that's what it is.
Well, and listen, I mean, as much as we're talking about that, you know, I've heard so many people, over the last couple months, you know, demonizing Izzo about a lot of things with the portal and everything else. But this is an intrinsic value change. I mean, this isn't just the game has changed, you got to adapt to it. This, you're talking about a guy who built 40 years of a career on not paying guys, on being above the board and avoiding that kind of thing, to in 2 years, 3 years, that becoming not just the norm, and not just becoming legal, but becoming the norm and becoming completely the antithesis of what he built his career on. And cardinal values and tenets of your program are tough, tough, tough things to get rid of. I mean, you know, that it, in some ways it would be like Izzo saying, you know what, let's just scrap all this gap man defense and let's run Boeheim's 2-3. You can't change yourself in the ethos of your
program. You have to leave. You have to get out. I think he knows. Like, the bottom line is, this is basketball. Like, and I think he's right. Aware of it. I mean, like, you're either in or you're out. And if you're out, that's okay. You've had a great career, but I think he's still in.
But philosophical differences take a little more. Philosophical changes like that, I think, take a little more processing. Because, I mean,
he's had some time.
Yeah. Yes and no. Because, I mean, when you got Brad Underwood and every other coach saying, I'm preparing for an Elite Eight game and I'm in the hallway trying to call portal guys, do you really have the time?
There are tremendous issues. The portal should not open until maybe May 1st, but certainly not until after the...
I'm talking about processing the philosophical issues. I mean, that's something that, you know, you say you've had time to do that, but, I mean, when it comes to a core value like that, processing it and changing it are two different things. And I think that's where he's at right now. Like, making that determination, yeah, or making that intrinsic change inside to say, okay, this is where we're at. But again, let's say he does that and it changes all again. I mean, it's so out of control.
He wouldn't have gotten Tyson Walker. When he's needed something, he's went out and got something.
Absolutely. And Joey Hauser. I mean, it's not like people saying he's averse to the portal or transfers. I mean, he's been slow moving. I mean, remember, 10 years ago, how much he didn't like the idea of grad transfers, and all of a sudden Brandon Wood showed up.
I'll give him credit here. I think that he is ultimately, he does think things aren't good for the players and the kids, and that's why he doesn't like them mostly. But ultimately, and look, almost half of eligible players for next year are going to be in the portal. And that's not healthy. It's not. And that's not what college basketball should be about, because if it's just going to be professional, I got bad news for college athletes and bad news for the sport and bad news for coaches, bad news for TV networks. That one of the reasons, like, that people are a little down on men's basketball, people are still into it, but is that some of the hallmarks of what made it great, sort of the athletes choosing your school, getting to know a player, getting to build a program, getting to have a dream with a young team that stayed with you, that stuff's going away, and the level of play ain't good enough to sustain it. Like, go watch an NBA game and then go watch this stuff. I'm telling you right now, I love hoops and I'll watch it, but it is not, like, these guys may want to be pros, they better get a hell of a lot better if they're going to be pros. These are not pros. They're really good Division I basketball players. They are well below what the guys are getting paid for at the next level, what the guys are getting paid for overseas, what the guys are getting paid for in Grand Rapids with the Drive and the Motor City Cruise. This is a lower level of basketball, and that needs to be understood. So you have to keep the things that make it charming, too. You have to keep some of the charm, or this thing will not survive in the long term.
I'll give you the but. The contrary but to that is, you don't have all these other places vying for that attention. These guys are local. I mean, let me put it this way. Years and years ago, when there were actually printed newspapers, kind of looking at dinosaurs, they're still around, so you can find them. But the reason that they were that newspapers operated at a major profit margin is because they were local, and people's eyeballs went to the advertising, and the advertisers paid more money for it, right? These guys are local. There are advertisers who will pay more money for them in the local communities that these colleges are in. So when we talk about the money that they're making, I mean, I got an email from a fast food chain restaurant, which I won't mention, that where Malik Hall and Tyson Walker are going to go. They're getting paid to do that.
But that's not their money. That's not really what they're making. What they're making is coming from Ishbia and St. Andre, and it's in the six-figure component, and has nothing to do with the chump change they make from everything else.
All that adds up. All of that adds up. And, you know, if you're not looking at it in concert, I mean, you could say that, you know, Ishbia has given this money too, and, you know, do we really know that anymore? I mean, I know that the UWM's got their thing, but, you know, there's also other NIL collectives. There's everything else that's happening with money outside. And the other thing that we don't know, we talk about the NIL collectives. What are they getting under the table still? Because that still exists. Like, let's not pretend like that doesn't exist. You have to report a certain amount that goes to that is an NIL structure, right? Because you have to report, I'm getting, you know, to the NCAA. But there are ways still to give guys more money.
Yeah, I mean, the flip side of that is, and SD4L, is, from what I understand, is still the basketball component for men and women, and that's St. Andre.
St. Andre, not so much Ishbia. Well,
I think there's money been put away there as long as Izzo's around. But and as long as Izzo around is a key point, people want Izzo to go. Like, none of this may exist for at the same level once he's gone. And I'm not saying any of this was right in the past. What we considered cheating years ago, I didn't write a ton of these columns, but I wrote some that I'm embarrassed by. Because what was right, now, I think having a competitive advantage over somebody by cheating is wrong, but some of the stuff that we thought, oh my God, you know, like, I remember standing around Miles Bridges in a Wisconsin locker room over a $40 receipt an agent bought for his family for a dinner. That's embarrassing on us. That's embarrassing on fans who thought that was wrong, and any fan base. The idea that that was an issue is crap. It just is. And there's a lot of stuff. So what's happening now may be making up for a lot.
I think we knew that at the time, but those were the NCAA rules. And guess what? You know who makes the NCAA rules? The NCAA member institutions. In proxy, the people that make those decisions are the basketball coaches and the administrators. So you're trying to hold – what we were doing was holding them to their own standards that they created, right? There are no rules anymore that matter. And so I've had this philosophical discussion with a lot of people. You know, what are we covering anymore? Because a lot of those things, like the Miles Bridges thing, aren't a thing anymore. And it's a different sport altogether. I mean, in two and a half, three years, like, college sports has changed that radically as to what is and isn't important. There's important conversations that we need to have with those kind of things. I've said that for a couple years now because the portal has changed things. Not so much the portal, but the NIL stuff. Because I can remember right the summer that it changed, I did a story on some of the football players who the first week, as a matter of fact, I believe – after the change, a guy I wrote a story about who had a football training system up near the Flint brought in a handful of Michigan State players and took them out to wine and dine, and took them to the golf course, took them to an NIL appearance at a sports bar they got paid for, and, you know, had them in his training videos and paid them and set them up with an LLC. And afterward, he broke it down to me, you know, how much he gave them and X, Y, and Z. And I thought to myself, and I said it to him, I said, you know, 2 weeks ago, this is completely illegal, and now this is what's next. And that's not even the change since then with the collectives.
Right. And the fact that it was illegal, it speaks to all of us in society and our pea brains and inability to get around what's right and what's not. And frankly, college sports may not be right. What is right may not be sustainable, because what exists now, college sports only exists now because of a system that we all loved, even if it wasn't right. If this had been the beginnings, college sports wouldn't exist. And so the question is, will it exist going forward in the collection of, you know, with NIL and the transfer portal and that combination, which is the problem. If you take away the transfer portal, you solve so much, because the NIL inducements change and the transfer portal, one-time transfer rule, is where I think the issue is. But, you know, it's an easy solve. Multi-year NIL contracts, buyouts, there are lots of ways to get around that, and I think in the next year or so we'll start to see some of that.
It's easy to say that until the players unionize. Now you got a whole other mess.
It's going to be a weak union, because they're only around for 4 years at a time. They're not willing to do, they won't be willing to do any of the hard stuff that it takes to really get anything done.
My opinion is that I think the professional sports leagues will get involved and make it a stronger union. Because that's ultimately it's their minor league system.
All right, so I want to talk a little football in our time left here, but let's anything else on the bat? Well, let's do one more thing basketball wise. Coaching change. Mark Montgomery. This is sort of the news of the day. Typical assets. We're well in our conversation before we bring it up. Mark Montgomery headed to U of D to be the head coach there. He had been the head coach of Northern Illinois for almost a decade. And before coming back to Izzo's staff, I think this is something he wanted. I think he'll be happier doing it. I think this is a lifestyle happiness decision, being his own boss, trying to run a program again, something he wanted to do. Still a fairly young guy. And tough job there. Any mid-major is tough right now. U of D is a tough job. But I think it speaks to where he wants to be and the type of control over his own life he wants to have. It'll be interesting to see what happens to MSU staff now, because right now Doug Wojcik works with the big guys, and I wouldn't be stunned to see him moved off that and they bring in somebody else to work with, you know, and I'll be very curious to see what direction they go here and how they reshape the staff. If they go outside, there are, you know, if they're guys who are part of the tree to some degree who are interesting to Izzo. And what he thinks needs to be done with that position.
Yeah, the interesting thing is that, you know, the guy that I think is probably one of the next assistants that he's got to come will be Tum Tum. You know, I mean, he's been down at Bowling Green now. I mean, he might be a guy in the next few years if an opening comes up, but he also would be best fit to work with the guards as well. It's not like, you know, it's not like there's a lineage here of post players that are in coaching that you say, oh, okay, we'll bring X, Y, or Z back to kind of work with the bigs. I mean, you're going to probably more than likely have to find someone outside. And I mean, I know Izzo's philosophy over the years has been to work with guys that he knows and trusts. But, you know, I think back to the D'Antonio situation with the, you know, I don't have a Rolodex of offensive coaches around. I mean, does Izzo being a guard guy with so many guard oriented coaches and players in his past have a Rolodex of big guy coaches?
Yeah, and to what degree do you need a recruiter or you know, I mean, you know, they brought in a guy like Goran Suton last summer to work with the big guys and had some success there, but is he ready for everything else that goes? Who knows? You know, I'll be interested to see what they do, and that'll have an effect to some degree, for sure. All right, let's talk some football here quickly. Spring football, our favorite thing. My favorite thing, by the way, about Michigan State's fan base is how little they care about spring football for a football school, because they cannot multitask between basketball and football. And for about 3 weeks, at least through March Madness, their heads are still there. It's still about what Izzo is going to do in the portal, staff, this much more interesting to them than spring football. And that's not that way a lot of places. And I like it, because if I had to really, really care about football in April, I think I would vomit. I can't do it. I love football in the fall. Love it. I'm a cyclical seasonal guy. And I think most of Michigan State's fan base is that way. That said, it's an interesting spring because you have a brand new coach, a brand new staff, a brand new quarterback people are excited about, returning guys who are trying to fit in, new guys who came with the staff. I mean, it is fascinating a spring as you will have coming off of that tumultuous fall. What are your sort of early impressions of everything you've seen or at least heard to this point, Chris?
Well, everything that you have at this point is theoretical rather than tangible. Hope springs eternal. I mean, it is literally like spring training in so many ways. When you have a coaching change, when you have new pieces that are coming in, there is no ceiling for this, because you don't know what's there. I mean, you know, I think back to the 2021 season, you know, when Mel Tucker, really, I'll call that his first full year, because the 2020 year between the late hire and the pandemic and everything else, that I don't care whatever he wanted to say or anybody else wanted to say about that, that wasn't reality. 21 was the closest thing to the first real year, and that was the first real portal class. I mean, and quite honestly, like, if you want to look at college sports of where things changed. What Mel Tucker did that year changed a lot of things around the country in a lot of ways, because he went out and actively mined the portal, found a superstar, and took a team that probably had no business being there into the top 10 and to a New Year's Six Bowl. The question now for Jonathan Smith in this is, I think, you know, how do you kind of get the minds of the players back on track? And it sure sounds like he has. Like, this staff has kind of reinvigorated the veterans who are still there.
Yep.
I think the Aiden Chiles situation, what's going to be fascinating to me to watch is, not only do they bring in Aiden Chiles, who has experience in Smith's offense with Brian Lindgren, they know the terminology, they know the beats that they need, they know the place book, but they also bring Tanner Miller in from Oregon State, who played right guard there last year, and I talked with him on Tuesday. And he and Aiden Chiles worked as the number two center and quarterback last year. So when you're not just bringing in a new quarterback, you're bringing in someone on the offensive line who's an extension of that quarterback, to know the calls, to know the translations to the guys to his left and right, which I think is, to me, going to be one of the bigger things, because, one, this offense has been stagnant, I think, is probably the kindest way to say it. Putrid would be another. And two, they haven't been able to run the ball. So now you got a guy up front who's an extension of the quarterback that can get things going in a different way. It's going to be fascinating to me to see how these changes develop on the offensive side. I mean, it's a team that, Oregon State last year had the number one red zone offense in the country. And that's, scoring points has been a problem for Michigan State.
No, it's a lot of hope springs eternal. But one thing I did like hearing from some of the veteran returner guys on Tuesday was just, they're trying to, you got to earn that trust. These guys have been through it, and that's something that I think the new staff has done pretty well in early conversations with Jordan Hall and Jane Magum and guys like that. And so that I think is a positive. But it's like this with every staff. This is the new culture. This is the better way. And I don't mean to poke fun at some of our media brethren, and some of them are the organizations they work for have Spartan in the title, so that creates a little more of a, but what I mean is, there, a lot of the questions are like, what do you like most about this new staff? It's not, what do you think of this new staff, which is the question. You're leading on, and it's the way it always goes. I mean, if this was 5 years from now and Jonathan Smith had been hired and somebody else was there, the old staff would be crap. The new staff would be great. This is the cult. This is the rinse repeat cycle that happens throughout coaching, and I think it's important to try to get to the root of how people are feeling. It's not that this won't be successful. It's not that this wasn't a great hire. It's not that this isn't a good fit. But I think it is an interesting time, because you're trying to earn trust. You're trying to earn buy-in. You're trying to see what sort of roster you have in place with a lot of guys who, a year ago at this time we thought were going to be part of the core of the build under Mel Tucker, that had a lot of promise still. So interesting times for sure. We'll talk more about spring football probably heading into the spring game, and then coming out of the spring game, and then thankfully not for a few months, and then again in the summer heading into the season.
The one thing I do want to say, I want before we end it, because I think it's important, when you mentioned about the trust factor, and that's, I think, going to be the interesting thing to really watch over the next 3, 4, 5 months, because Jim Mikalczyk, the new offensive line coach, said these kids aren't dummies. They understand a lot of this. And when I asked Jordan Hall, about, just what exactly, were the initial impressions, he brought up that anecdote about Jonathan Smith, where he said, write down three things.
Right, right.
And Jordan Hall said he wrote down two things, and then the last thing he said, I want to check and see if you're reading this. Here's my phone number. Give me a call. And he got the call. It's a fascinating dynamic of the trust. When you talk about Jim Mikalczyk saying, these guys aren't dummies, Jordan Hall's a smart kid, and Jonathan Smith is a guy that is attentive, and that to me says maybe more about anything that's happening with this program than we've seen.
Yeah, no, I think there's, you know, not that the previous coach would have done that, but you know that we don't know anymore. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed today's show. We appreciate Nate Bott for joining us earlier, and then of course the two of us always appreciate you listening. This is Spartan Speak has been a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and USA Today Network. Please rate, subscribe, throw fruit, whatever it is, and we will talk to you soon.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.